Okay, today is another Tuesday, September 14th, and we are going to have about 1 hour for the discussion in the English medium. So, as everyone knows, we are in the Duttattaka Sutta, Attaka Vagga Sutta Nipata. So, before going to this Sutta-based discussion, if someone is having, if anyone is having a question or statement or any participation, we would like to take a few minutes before going to the traditional way.
Sri Bhante, we have report, one report we received. With your permission, I can read it.
Yeah, we are from here also. There is one request, but I will give Aris the chance. You may present, please, Ari.
This report is also from Onaya. Dear Bhante, I am 17 years. Last week, you asked me to look my thoughts as concepts rather than attaching myself to them. So this is my recent experience. Please advise me. Sitting meditation. I sat down comfortably and closed my eyes. Thoughts flooded my mind as usual, but this time, more strongly, I was in a happy mood before sitting down for meditation. So this time I had a very strong attachment to my thoughts as they portrayed my desires in various forms. I was able to see this attraction but was unable to completely detach myself from them to see them as mere concepts. It almost felt like I was daydreaming because my thoughts made me feel detached from the world around me. However, there was small moments amidst these thoughts where the attention would be focused on my breath. These small moments helped me detach from my thoughts and see them as concepts for a while. However, the moment my conscience realized a detachment, it ended and I again attached myself to the thoughts. This went on for the majority of the until I heard my alarm and came out.
So I'm very happy, young.
That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Yeah, young characters are sharing from the bottom of the heart, and whenever you are thinking, it appears like a concept. But if you are ignorant, ultimately it becomes reality. You become the thought. Tata tata virantan tata tai upanishati. Whatever the way you think, whatever the way you talk, whatever the way you did, that to that it is pushing. But if you know it is a slowly process from the thought to the words to the deeds, then you can understand they are just concepts. But repetitive application and habituation, ultimately you become that. This is what brainwashing, this is what the conditioning, that is what the media is doing. But they don't see the changes from the concept to reality. So you, in a wrong idea, you think always it's a concept. No. If you are ignorant, if you do not know the mechanism, ultimately they solidify, precipitate, and they become reality. They become materialistic. They can collapse into matter. But if you stop at the concept level, you are safe enough. You can nip it at the bud level. But it's a very quite involved kind of meditation, contemplation as well as meditation, we call inferential knowledge, we call deductive knowledge, and we call rational knowledge and debatable knowledge. Thought become inferential, ultimately you become a thought. And Jonathan Livingston Seagull, John Buck, says he is in such a dive. It's a seagull is flying. It is wingtip to wingtip, nothing but a thought. I am completely imbibed. I feel like a thought. So this is what the people are doing. That is what the marijuana is doing. This is what the cashewina is doing. And this is what the alcohol is doing. That is what the habituation is doing. And that is what the artificial intelligence is doing. That is what the technology is doing. It's a very prolific. Ultimately, you don't know it's a concept. So now you are in a situation, but don't adhere to the one extreme telling it is only a concept. It can be a reality. It can, you may make it into a reality if you are ignorant about the process. But if you are mindful and diligent about the process, you can see how the concept become reality. And if you have time and if you are really interested in, you can read the book Concept and Reality by Venerable Katukunde Jnanananda. And before that, E.R. Sarachandra's PhD thesis, Early Buddhist Thoughts of Concepts. That is how changes happen. So you can understand how the others are thinking. You can understand why others are talking like that. Why others are behaving like that. Because they are in a thought. Ergo cogito sum. I think, therefore I am. That is the Western thinking. The Rene Descartes presented. But you are challenging it. I am happy. But don't take all the thoughts are just concepts. There are some deep roots. If it is not mindful, you become succumb to your own concepts. It's called you get engulfed with your own thoughts. That is what we call bubbles, mind-made bubbles. Today, whole economy is a bubble. Politics is a bubble. Technology is a bubble. And infrastructure is a bubble. People become slaves to that because they don't know their concept. So therefore, don't say it's a concept, don't say it's a reality. If possible, see how the concept becomes reality and then how reality you can dissolve into concept is equal to mc square, energy or matter. So that will be a very interesting for endeavorance or research for you. If you get the idea, if you grasp the idea, I would like to listen from you even in the next time. And if it is not so, I can spare a little time for that. And please question whether it is not well communicated. We are going to the question from here. You may take the mic.
Sri Swaminansa, I would like to briefly introduce my sitting meditation report over the past few days. The last time I reported that my mind was at a place where it was at rest and was not troubled by feelings or the gross subject. Developing from there, I started to observe some features like the observance of a bright white light and then losing sensation in my body and having a floating sensation, as well as very high level of happiness pervading throughout the body. During the first few sessions that I noticed this, my mind was totally engulfed in it and was really enjoying it. But over around 2-3 more sittings, the mind itself realized the temporary nature of it and that it only lasted during the period of the sitting meditation. As of right now, whenever these occurrences happen, mind just makes a note of it, and through that, although the sensations are there from time to time, the mind is not attached to it. And it is also noticed that the mind always comes back to the gross object. It does not have an attraction towards other feelings or staying outside the gross object. It always comes back home to the in-breath and out-breath. But sometimes it is observed that it is hard to find the limit between observing a thought and being involved in a thought. That's the end of my report, Swaminansa.
Yeah, that whenever mind is going from kaya anupassana, the materialistic part, the breath, the walking meditation, that kind of thing, naturally it goes to the immaterial part, feelings. So now you feel like attending to your age life. Now you have exceeded the materiality. Now you can feel the good feeling, bad feeling, like it is not material. And you feel really, really achieving, you really, really passing some milestones like. But that thrills and frills slowly disappearing. And then you are going to the chittanupassana, mental moods, very agitated mind and calmed mind, lustful mind, hateful mind. At the beginning, you feel like you are a stranger to yourself. Then you are exploring and going to that, and you go to the another layer. Now you are not only the feeling, other mental aspects. And then you are now no materiality, feeling, and the mental part, chitta anupassana. And then you are not only in sitting now. you are not only walking, and the birds are chirping, you can see how my mind is working with it. It's a distraction, or good for mindfulness. Like, then expansion happens, then each time you are reaching the one stage, frills and thrills, ultimately they become normalized. And again, you are going to the Dhammanupassana, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, everywhere. Ultimately, you find, what are the places where I am not mindful? Earlier, you are finding the path to introduce mindfulness, get into the mindfulness. Now you see, everywhere the mindfulness. There, sitting is part and partial. Walking is part and partial. When Jnanarama says, even if you are in that Dhammanupassana level, that means natural phenomena, seeing, hearing, don't miss the sitting session. Just do regularly walking session, then your structure is maintained, timetable is maintained, you are very obedient, you are in your beginner's mind. And whenever this Dhammanupassana lost, there's a base. You are falling down to the Kayanupassana level. Even the Chittanupassana dropped. Maybe corona or something happened to you, you are desperately upset. But Kayanupassana is giving the foundation, or Vedananupassana. So therefore, you are not losing the base. Keeping that, you are ready to go to up level. More and more you go there, frills and thrills, you feel like writing, you feel like teaching, you feel like sharing with others. But few days time, they become normalized. Even if you attain Nibbana, it's a frills and thrills, but then you are again a normal man. So Zen saying, it says, before meditation, mountain is not, it's a mountain. While meditating, mountain is no more the mountain. It's patavyapo, tejo, vayu, liking and disliking. And after the enlightenment, again the mountain is mountain. So that change, you can't do if you are assuming. I am at the Kayanupassana level, I am Vedananupassana level, Chitta. Once you assume, your changing nature disappear, your simple beginner's mind disappear. They're transitional. Each and everyone, they have thrills and pills. In Zen Buddhism, it is called Satori. And Western people, they call quick enlightenment. Then and there, they get some packages, some benefits or gifts or endowments. Not that you are not getting discouragement, of course. Discouragements are the one highlighting you and establishing your knowledge, because it is your own. It is not a borrowed one. You are dropping and again coming back, resilience, disappearance. And when ultimately you know without anyone's support, anyone, any theory, any formula, once you've fallen, you know you are fallen. And you know that you are the one only can get up. So that is the way it is happening. So I feel it sounds good. Okay, now I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhitara to proceed with the same sutta we started, and then open the discussion for the open discussion.
Okay, so I'm continuing towards the final verse in this octet on the hostile, the Duttakata Sutta. So I'll just finish. You read the second last, just as a lead into the last. One who is cleansed formulates no view anywhere in the world about various states of existence. Having abandoned hypocrisy and conceit, through what would the cleansed one go astray when he is uninvolved? One involved is embroiled in disputes about teachings, about what could one dispute with one uninvolved? Nothing is taken up or rejected by him. He has shaken off all views right here. So we come to the end of this sutta, which is on views or on hostility. And the core of this is this dance between craving and views as driving hostility. So the Buddha here is again discussing in the last verse that one involved is embroiled in disputes about teachings. So in this case, the background story was that it were was the ascetics from other sects who were kind of embroiled with a dispute with the Sangha over their teachings. But the underlying cravings that were involved were that the Sangha were getting well supported and the ascetics of the other sects were jealous or envious or not being as well supported. But how about what could one dispute with one uninvolved? Here, Bhikkhu Bodhi is using the word uninvolved. I'd like to suggest also the word free from involvement. So that if one is involved, one is drawn into disputes. If one is free from involvement, one is not drawn into disputes. If I just use the normal meaning of the word, say uninvolved, one could sound like one was disinterested or numb or dumb or sort of willfully ignorant, not uninvolved. But it's more a freedom from involvement. So if one is free from involvement, if one can pay attention to things and one can look and see, but isn't drawn in by one's views, is free from involvement. One doesn't need to dispute one's perspective. One isn't drawn into team blue or team red. Then one becomes free from involvement. So again, this is quality of equanimity or equipoise, where one is actually can be deeply interested, say, for instance, in one's object of meditation, but one isn't fierce about it. One isn't disputing about it. One isn't involved in the object of meditation. One is free from involvement. And this ability to ever so lightly hold an object, to not be grasping, not craving to it, is a very profound skill. So nothing is taken up or rejected by him. So here again, like I suppose, like it's like taking up to take up an argument or reject an argument. So it's not that he's not interested. He is just so gently holding the object that he's not taking it up. He's not grasping or clinging onto it, and he's not rejecting it. He's not rejecting it in views. So this is very critical to why people are hostile and disputous, because they have such a vested interest, or they have an idea, or they have a conceit about this view, and they reject other people's views. Again, coming back to a famous quote by John Stuart Mill's, he was a political philosopher, and he said, like, you don't really understand the other person's argument if you can't articulate it better than they can do themselves. So this ability to see different perspectives in the realm of views is also a kind of a quality of vipassana. Vipassana means to see things in a multifold way or in an extraordinary kind of a way. But we can see it from different angles, different aspects, and that can be illuminating. So if somebody disagrees with us, that can be an opportunity for us to deepen our knowledge about this same topic or subject. Whereas for a hostile kind of person, they will just reject the arguments and say they're wrong. Well, even if it's so-called wrong, it can still be enlightening. It can still throw your own understanding into a kind of a contrast, or it's a kind of what they call a via negative, like it's a negative argument. So you can kind of understand things more deeply and have a better bite into your knowledge or subject because of that opposition, because of that different perspective. So, but we have to understand, you know, the difference between, say, skeptical thinking or cynical thinking, like where somebody is just being negative for the sake of negative or hostile for the sake of hostile. But nevertheless, if you pay attention to very skilled kind of diplomatic people, you know, not just people who are smooth talkers or sweet talkers or something like that, but people who are also insightful. And they show that they understand your argument and are deeply paying interest and listening to what you have to say. And yet at the same time can with intelligence, sort of show you the flaw of your own line of thinking. I mean, this can be very liberating. You know, you really feel free, you laugh because you've been shown up as quite incorrect by a good teacher. So this is where, like, the problem with views is even if they're right, we can hang on to them too much or be blinded by them. And then it becomes not quite skillful or useful. So the enlightened person has shaken off all views right here. Nothing is taken up or rejected by him. He has shaken off all views right here. So this ability to shake off views, it doesn't mean that he's ignorant. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have like a deep insight into what is correct action or what is incorrect action. An aspect of delusion is that we see everything as all the same. You know, nothing is all the same. So I can say something is tall and something else is small. You know, you could say, well, that's just a view. That's just an opinion. But we can have our own mutual facts. So it's about this aspect of views that's important. And again, if you ever have the opportunity to, you know, follow, say, a great insight, say, for instance, like if you read about Einstein and how he came up with relativity and so on, it was about how he had a sudden insight and a change in his own perception. Like while he was taking a tram or a bus to work and he was looking at the clocks in the city. And he was looking at the clocks, realizing that time was relative. So we can see that our views can really tie us down to a view of the world. Another view that I'm often aware of is that people think that the world is round these days, that you know, you'll be mocked if you say, I believe in a flat earth. But most people can't give you good evidence of from their daily life of how the world is round. It's quite understandable why in ancient times people thought the world was flat. So to be shaken off, to not be tied down to our views, is a great freedom. And so the enlightened person is not held down by views. He shakes off all views right here. So this is the origin of dispute and hostility. Is this dance between clinging and views?
So, as I tried to mention about 40 years ago, Venerable Dhammika tried to convince me. Telling that the last sentence of this sutta, that all the views are wrong views. So therefore, no views is the best view. So it was a little shocking because I am a child from a traditional Buddhist country. We thought we are in the wrong, correct view. Other religious people are wrong views. We call agame kattiye. Agame means any view believers. They belong to a sect, they belong to a religion. But Buddhist, they are in a sammaditti, they are in the correct view. So therefore, I was under the impression, of course, I was killing animals and robbing and all sex feelings and lying and alcohol, all are doing, I mean, physically, day to day. But believing that I am sammaditti. And with Dhammika, I know he is coming from the Christian background or Catholic background, and he is now teaching me, all views are wrong. No views is the best. So it was very difficult to chew, not palatable. But he is a pleasant character, so I was keep on practicing. And I observed whether that is the same thing from Venerable Jnanarama. He's a traditional monk. He became a monk, ordained in age 13. And I just put that idea, but he's not readily accepted. But he says any view can be misleading. So therefore, no view is the view is not the radical answer he give. But whatever the view you take, you have to analyze it from your perspective, and then only you can come. So he took a very mild this thing. And I try my best, but I have no statement for the moment to make about who Pandita Sayadaw. But he and the Maharshi system fail to understand Sabhava Lakhana, the natural characteristics, can't make any view. They are in meditation. They say first you see the shape of it, and then you see the manner of it. Once it has come up to a peak, immediacy and close observation, everything is in flux, 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 flux. And when you come to the flux, your views are being shaken. So Maharshi system is shaken. Maharshi present day, not a single teacher, they can understand the flux of it. This is not, 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 not. Each time you are noting, you come back to the shape or the manner. They can't go beyond the shape and the manner to the natural characteristics. Book is there. Book stays, shape to the manner to the natural characteristics. So I was observing, always they facilitate to come back to the beginner's mind, in the sense, the noting mind, the materialistic mind. But when meditators are improving, the teachers do not know how to handle it. But they can't understand each view is wrong. They can't make the mind free to accept no view situation. I mean, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Ultimately, that only qualify you to see only the passing away part. Because otherwise you are naturally attached to the arising part. You at least see arising and passing away equal. But once you accepted no view, that means you are ready to accept passing away. Bhanga-jnana. Bhanga-jnana is destructive. It is suicidal. Your whole base, your whole argument, your views, everything is questioned. So very difficult for elderly people. Because they have their own views, their own frame. So they are not happy. And I think still by interviews and you can guide them. Okay, while you are in meditating itself, let the things to happen as it is. Don't try to have preconceived ideas. Don't try to have choice. So he mentioned together with Bhikkhu Bodhi about the involvement. I am attached with the no choice, choicelessness. And that is introduced by the Ken Wilber for the first time. And then Professor Padmasiri says motivation. We are always doing something with a choice or involvement or motivation. If there is no motivation, no choice, no involvement, you are lethargic. No drive. So how to facilitate, how to energize, how to make a person to be meditation, they should have a motivation. They should have a choice. They should have an involvement. So now you are learning how to get rid of involvement, how to get rid of choice, how to get rid of motivation. You are learning. You are motivated to come and meditate. You are motivated to see things as they are. You are motivated to be mindful. But through the motivation, you are going to the no motivation. That is a twist. That's the gist of it. And therefore self-destructive. It is happening for the top class meditators. They are each view is wrong. So after 40 years, now I read, Adosi so ditta mideva sabbanti. This gatha is for the Pali loving people. Upayohi dhammesu upeti vadam anupayankena katang vadeya. Attan nirattang hi nahi. Attang nirattang nahitasa atti adosi sodittu midheva sabbanti. that has been translated into Sinhala in Tipitaka book, Tannadi Upenisra Atteme Ye Dharmyanhi Vadeta No Elambe. Tannadi Nisra Atteme Ye Dharmyanhi Vadeta No Elambe. They knows we have the lustful or tendency for the lustful feeling, hate also there. And but he is not going for argumenting. Upayohi dhammesu upeti vadam. Many people are fighting with the choice. Many people are fighting with the involvement. Many people are fighting with the motivation. Now you know it. And he is trying to not to go into the argument. In Thannaditti upe nattahu raga dosayana kavara karunakin kiyisin kiyanne dohuta. So whenever you are not arguing, you are not going to prove there is a soul. You are not going to prove there is no soul. Having a soul or not, you are not going to argue. Because you see, for your thinking, there is a soul. For your thinking, no soul. But generally we accept. Buddhists accept no soul. Anatta. But here the Buddha says, Atta nirattangi. Arattang nirattang nahi tasati. He is not adamant to say there is no soul. He is not adamant to say there is a soul. So leaving that aside is kind of a shocking for the people familiar with the commentaries. So Bhikkhu Bodhi is a commentary lover. He always never go beyond the commentaries because it's a colossal amount of knowledge. And therefore, either he has to take the Atta, soul, or no Atta. So Buddhists usually take, because all the other things is omnipotent, omnipresent God is there. So Buddhism is not. And therefore, they are arguing, either have Atta or no Atta. But the Buddha says, it is because of you have your grasp of the views. Adosi so ditta mi deva sabbanti. A Sinasro Mahana, that enlightened monk, in this very life, beyond all views, gotten rid of all the views. So therefore he never developed argument. He never developed involvement or choice or motivation. So people think he's callous. People think he is ignorant. People think he is just avoiding everything, but he is not getting involved. So therefore, for such a person, there is no argument, no tension of lost, no gain, because no vada, no argumenting. So therefore, how that this is related to the killing of Sundari and making a news for the popular media. And the Buddha, this is the answer the Buddha gave, because other monks are really disturbed, but the whole world is made to believe monks are misused that prostitute and killed her and hide her. Many are believing. That is what the first stanza says. Vadanti che dutta manapi eke atobi che samma satcha mana vadanti. A wrong idea with the ascetics, other ascetics, made this news. It's completely with the malice idea. It's a racket. But many, and they are making stories, and many are believing because it is the truth. That lady is missing. Found the carcass in the Jetavanaram. So many believe him because immediate examples are to say what they are telling is factful. So now the Buddha is on the other side. And the monks are agitated. He says, Banti, shall we do something? Because this, you see, utterly adverse situation. They have made the news. Many people are believing, made believe kind of a news. What shall we do? Buddha says, just wait. You just wait, rabbit, you just wait, in the cartoon. And it is not callous. It is not just to shut the monk's ideas. Buddha says time will reveal. So each and every ditti has its own consequences. So therefore these points, when I learned for the first time in 1977, 78, 79, very difficult to digest. Very difficult to digest. But the Venerable Buddha Rakita, in his mention, he quoted, I would like to know his name, the articulate the same argument better.
John Stuart Mills. He's a very famous.
So is it in the book or your
from memory, my own memory. Yeah.
So that is the way. Now you see Buddha Rakita is making an argument with me. We are fighting, daily we are fighting at least 1 hour, no problem. So what I do is, I articulate in a different way. I know your subject, and this is the way it happens. So I am going with him. I am not going to say, you are wrong, you are younger person, you are Irish, you are fool, get out. No, anyway. I do it. The same thing, if I want to drive off a rotten nail, if you try to fight with the nail, it will break. Ultimately, you can't use the equipment because the iron part will inside. So what you have to do is, if the nail is imbibed and rotten and gone into the wood, you have to hit it in the same way to go more fixed-like. Same way you have to hit it. And then all the rusting thing will reduce. And if you touch from the other side, nail will get out. If you are going to touch from the other side at the beginning, nail will bend, all the weakness can happen. So you have to tighten it further. That is the way the carpenters are doing. You have to tighten the same thing, and then every the rust shaken, and then just if you touch from the other side, it can go. So therefore you have to go with his argument. You have to learn his argument. Appreciate his argument and say, okay, I know this subject, but I know more than you. So ultimately when you go more lucrative way, more the term he used is articulated way, the argument is dissolved. You have to go with him. You have to know, you must never fight with him. By fighting, you are developing emotions. But articulating the same thing, lucrative way, you have to earn his heart to understand, are you also happy with this subject? Before giving my view, I am ready to discuss with you. Please take into the table and we'll discuss. So that is the, I think, most skillful thing of a media person. Whenever he is taking a big shots, he is putting a question. If you are a really, really understood person, you analyze it with the question person instead of giving answers. And then put himself into the trouble before you commit into that. And I studied in the BBC analytics, and I studied in the mind of inquiring mind, Niskara and kind of thing, how they are analyzing other people, questioning other people, and get the maximum out of that. The point I made is, I'm going to make it more louder. Present day, bestsellers are not from the meditators, not from the researchers, only from the book writers. They are never meditating, they are never doing research. But they extract everything by putting a question, one or two questions, ultimately they are coming with such a bright ideas. So let me have one example, still I admire it. I went to Southern University Library in Sydney and I read a book, it is for the student brain and a collection of articles. And they are Daniel Goleman, it's been questioned. Question by another question and asking. Daniel Goleman is the one best writer, bestseller, and leading in mindfulness now. And he's been asked, we heard that you are doing some kind of a research in Connecticut University, New Haven University. You are learning
emotional learning, not the IQ, not the EQ. And now you have come out with an idea, emotional literacy. Let me explain. IQ, intelligent quota, emotional quota, and emotional literacy. And very nice questions, 2-3 questions. Then the Daniel Turmand is telling, that is why before someone is interacting with someone, we have in this school red light, amber light and green light. If the red light is there, you must not fight. You just wait. And red to amber is a good sign because green is about to happen. And immediately green happens, you have to go. But after the green amber light is a danger sign. So you have to be aware about your emotions, emotional literacy. So it is the turning point in our age about the mindfulness. And then while I am reading, I checked it, I heard it is the Daniel Turmand, Goldman is telling. He last time he gave a voice cut also for our conference. And this time also we are trying. And what he's talking about is, I don't know whether it crossed my mind or in the article, I got the book later. Now mindfulness is not therapy, it has become preventative. Earlier mindfulness was completely American mindfulness is therapeutic mindfulness, healing mindfulness, business mindfulness. After the 9/11 attack, they wanted to know how a person can do such a brutal thing. How is his emotional understanding? And how can we tell the young children, don't go for that kind of thing. You must have your emotional literacy. You must understand your fellow emotional literacy. Then we are naturally good people. Otherwise only we can be illiterate about other emotions and you become a brutal. So the Daniel Goleman's that argument, then talk and kind of thing, he bring the mindfulness from the therapeutic stand to the preventative. Don't let it happen and heal, but find a ways and means not to happen. But this one, the Duttattaka Sutta, it is not there. The Buddha is giving a therapeutic now because Sundari is killed, monks are making fuss, and the Buddha says, just wait. It is still, I find, the therapeutic. But the example I gave is for the preventative. So now in our age, mindfulness is coming from the therapeutic to preventative age. So there you can understand the meditators never contribute to this. Because even the therapeutic mindfulness is difficult for a beginner. So we can't teach preventative. We have to first teach therapy. But that is not our policy. Our policy is to go to the preventative. So therefore go to the therapy and once understood, you have to turn it and say prevention is better than cure. So likewise, this changing, it is a change of views, change of grasping. So your involvement is different, choice is different, motivation is different. So there is a kind of a, that is the, what happened in hidden curriculum. So far in the education, hidden curriculum was there, we have been taught, but hidden curriculum is more prominent than the official curriculum. Mindfulness also, when you are practicing, not the mindfulness is going to make much difference in you, but the clear comprehension accompanied with the mindfulness ultimately going to give a choiceless awareness, going to give us evenly suspended attention, going to give a not involved judgment, uninvolved judgment, it is called non-judgmental. And you see the motivation. And that is clear comprehension or radical thinking. So you must go prepared without the preconceived ideas. You must go prepared, not meditated or conceived ideas. That is Nibbana. That is Nibbana. That is what happened. Shape, manners is going into natural characteristic. Natural characteristic is not your thing. Wind is blowing, fire is heating, water is flowing, it's natural. So when you see yourself,
is a part and partial of this natural phenomena, the view is not necessary. To go up to that view is necessary. Methodology is necessary. Shape, manners are necessary. So these things for the beginner's mind. But once you go up to that level, all you are disproving, you are accepted pet ideas, pet views. And again you come back to the normal world. Again you go to the meditation and the meditation mood, no views and no pet ideas. Again come to. So this is a very challenging, it's a very challenging task for a monk, for a meditator. So you must have a conducive condition, friends and theories. And then only you can write this. You can cross this current, water current. So therefore, no views is too much for a beginner. You must have a view. Even the Muslim can do it. Even the Catholic can do. Even the Hindus can do. You have nothing to give up the view. You just continue. When the maturity happens, you are being invited to see choicelessly. See evenly suspended attention. That is what the Buddha is telling, Majjhima Patipada. Eight Noble Eightfold Path, unshaken. So religious people can't comprehend it. Because all your religious values have kind of a task, but it is dropped halfway. They are shedding. Ultimately, on the subtle only go to the moon. All the Saturn V rockets, three rockets, are being burnt off. They do the task and drop. So that is the part I am telling, evolution. That's the part I am telling. Verily mentioned that you are ready to change, ready to your own view. So your friend only, you will tell me that earlier you told like that, you are telling something different. Yes, yes. Thank you very much. That is what this mindfulness is doing. That is what the clear comprehension is doing. That is what the shifting of the paradigm happens. Otherwise, you are an idiot. You are an idiot. Only by comparison only, friends, dialogue and argument only, we feel our evolution. That is what we call from the view to the no view, from the ego to no ego, from the explainable to non-explainable, from the boundaries to no boundaries. So it is happening now. So that is my way of analyzing. So I'd like to hear. Yes.
Thank you, Swami Nansa and Bhante Rakitat, for teaching and this really great topic for us to reflect on. The way I understand it, just in my own practice, is if I were to have a view that, or if I were to take a view that through natural, I mean, naturally human beings have aversion and a tendency to fight and be aggressive and defend themselves, and this is just evolutionary. Animals have this instinct, and if I tend to be prone to that through my life, have developed that tendency to be aggressive and feeling hate and ill will towards people, and generally view life in that way, if I tend to have reinforced those habits throughout my life, and then my view would be something of always seeing the world in that way. So if somebody were to come to me and accuse me of something, like in the sutta, accusing the bhikkhus of being involved with this prostitute, and then if my normal way of seeing things would be they're attacking me, I've got to defend myself, I've got to disprove them, and you know, already I'm getting into a confrontation, and sort of missing. So what you all are saying, I'm hearing that, you know, rather than getting involved with their view or my own view, that, you know, rather than taking up my own view that life is all, you know, aggression and you must fight for your fight for everything, and seeing having a corrupt view of life being based on hate and separation of between self and the other. So then I would get involved, rather than getting involved with that view of mine or with the view that the other person is coming at me saying, you've done this. So rather than that, just sitting back and listening to the other person and seeing what is it that you're saying, and being not ready to fight or get involved is the way. So putting down your own views, not having views, and also not being involved with other people's views is a way to be mindful and present and just aware of facts and trying to see what is the fault in their view, or what is the fault in my view that I'm holding on to, and not reacting and getting into a fight. And then, so that's my kind of feeling about this from my own practice. And I just noticed that if somebody accuses me of something, I tend to react strongly and want to defend myself, rather than to just listen and see what is this person really saying, and what is it true, or, you know, what is, did I do something that's that I need to be honest about and know, or is this, you know, what's going on here really? And and then, so that's, you know, it's really a great teaching, and because I think we normally, human beings, react immediately and want to defend themselves or be right, and that's holding on to a view. And then the other thing I'm missing with the sutta is that why did the people kill the prostitute? What was the motivation of that? Why, you know, why didn't they do something else? Why didn't they just go to the monks and say, what's going on here? Or, you know, what was the motivation behind killing the prostitute? That seems to be missing for me. I don't know if I missed that somehow. Thank you, Swami Nansen.
No, at the beginning, when you are mentioning about the root cause, it says recently arose Buddha and his disciple got the fame and gain. The other one were much older. They had their own traditional ways of earning the heart of the people. But now Buddha is earning more than that, and the disciples are earning more than that. And therefore, they wanted to keep the fame, gain and everything. So they wanted to tarnish the Buddha and the disciples' good name. So therefore, they made use the same tactic. Let that prostitute have questionable behavior together with these monks and abnormal time going and coming, and let the people to see. They are not talking, and all of a sudden, the prostitute is missing. And everyone is as if, and these are the people who killed, and they are making, after a while, why don't you think about that lady is missing? And everywhere, king is checking everywhere. This is, we can't go to the Jetavanarama because it is a monk's place, so please give us permission. Now we will go and see there also. So king gives an equal chance. When you go there, you can see the decaying carcass. And they found, oh, you see, so all the country believed. That's the case. Towards the end of your this thing, how to prevent this kind of thing? That emotional literacy means that. Because the Buddha never mentioned in this sutta how to not to happen this kind of thing in future. I mean, he is taking care about all the meditating monks. He is not going beyond to the ascetics or so other the believers or killers, not to do it. Here the Buddha is giving the defensive argument, monks, just wait, the truth will come. It will tell the truth. We are not going to tell others, why don't you do away with this kind of thing. That kind of a preventative part is not there in this sutta. But I mean, even without that, that's such a grave situation, even the defensive part is valuable. And as you mentioned, they can come to the Buddhism and they can learn it. It is not being prevented. But they are very adamant. They are, how do you call, stereotype. They consider Buddha and teaching as something wrong. So they never accept it. So that is what this person is telling. You have to articulate the same, the truth the Buddha is telling. And for that, these ascetics has to come and learn little Buddhism. They are not learning. They are taking their own adamant this thing. And ultimately, Buddha is not going to handle it. And why Buddha is explaining why. He says, if you are wrong at the perception level, Buddha can do. If you are wrong at the mental level, Buddha can do. If you are wrong at the viewpoint, that means irrevertible. Sanya chitta ditthi. Sanya level, we can say, hey darling, you are in a wrong perception. Why don't you look from this perspective? You may consider. But you have the chitta level, you made up your mind. Hey, this guy is always bullying me. I will not give up. Still you can have articulation and kind of thing. But if you are the hard and fast viewer, Buddha says, just like you are sowing valid seeds on the rock, it will never grow. So Buddha is not going for the ditthi level. He is taking the sanya and chitta level. So therefore, offensive part is not there here. Useless. Defensive part is therefore the monks. Hey monks, you just wait and see and you can understand what a kind of a racket. We are answering by not doing bad things. We are not going to give a proliferate answer. Or we are not asking them to come and we are not going and putting lodging a complaint against the king. You see what a kind of a racket, why do you want to kill them? No. The Kamma and Kamma theory will do it. The Buddha is very defensive. And for us, present day, what the media is telling? Utterly bullshit. And with that, they are taking the political power. They are taking the economic power. And they are taking the interpreting power. What the hell? We don't care because we have mindfulness. We are busy with our mindfulness. You can earn. You can. What the kind of money involved in this kind of a politics? In the economics? If you are thinking in terms of money, we are not significant for these kind of big dragons. Because we are making ourselves insignificant. We are minding our own business and be mindful. So if you wish to save from the government of America, sorry, I am using the name, don't get organized. Any organization, they know how to tackle. But if you are decentralized, you are mindful here and now I am. He is mindful here and now I am. I am mindful here and now I am. No one can find the harness, no one can kill. Individually, America is not, it is insignificant. As far as you are insignificant, America don't care. Their system is, whenever you become organized, they are organized through the American system. They take the whole harness, you see. So therefore, organization is satanic. Krishnamurti is well said. Any organization is satanic because it is happening through permanent policies, permanent constitutions. Satanic?
Satanic.
Satanic, I am sorry. Yeah? We call Satan, so therefore we don't know how to pronounce Satan. Any organization is satanic. So Krishnamurti is telling, just be mindful. He never tell mindful. Buddha says, go to the forest, be under the tree, that kind of thing, you are safe.
So just as an example of within the Buddhist tradition of how the Buddhist monks so absorbed and understood the argument of the ascetics, what happened was the Jains lost their written literature in ancient times. So when they were trying to reassemble their teachings after Mahavihara had died, they actually extracted all of the teachings about Jain from the Buddhist teachings and teachers. So the history of the Jains, the views about what the Jain teachers were teaching and practicing and how they practiced, that was all being recorded by the Buddhist monks. And then when the Jains wanted to reboot their own religion, and because they had lost all their teachings, they went to the Buddhist teachings to extract them all out again and said, well, here's our teachings again, you know, straight from the Buddhist literature itself. So
that's how well articulated it was by
the Buddhist monks. They understood the argument. They preserved it. They recorded it so well that the Jains said, that's our teachings back again.
So I went to Kabai because I had 2-3 weeks free. So I went there. There's one book called The Jainism, the Swetambara, Nilambara, 2 sects. So they are comparing Pali Ardhamagadhi Sutta and their language. Exactly the same. Very little dialectical changes. And when you are reading, you can understand they have Raga Dosa Moha. They have Sila Samadhi Prajna. They have the mind, the words, and the deeds. All the things are equal. Ultimately, you can see by reading the sutta, the point that he made, the few suttas really, really talking about what they were telling while the Buddha was in living, contemporary time. It's been recorded in Theravada. And now they are compiled everything and they take the measuring yardstick from the Theravada. And wherever you go in India, each and every famous place, Jaina temple is within the premise. Saranath, Buddhagaya, Kushinara, everywhere. Because Buddhism is the one who preserved them. And they are living tradition. Buddhism is no more a living tradition in India because people are happy with their behavior and they are more religious, but the Buddha is exactly the same. So now it is time up. I am telling exactly the same for astrology, exactly the same for Ayurveda. Everything is under medical science. The way the Buddha preserved medical science, astrology and the Ayurveda, medical Ayurveda, exactly the same, and the Western medicine also, very interesting. The Buddha is talking about the mindfulness, but all the other tradition in term of argumenting or finding fault, Buddha very philosophically analyzed it. And ultimately this argument is there, Besajjakkandaya in Tripitaka. That's about the medicine. And the Buddha says, monks must know astrology. Find the direction. And he has given the basics. And grammar. Literature. Anything, if you go back, no one can touch the base without Buddha. So therefore, now, after the corona and everything, it is slowly, slowly appearance. But the thing is, organized religions are very powerful. They don't give the real due course, due credit to the Buddha. Not necessary. We need not to get the high recognition from the others. We just be mindful and mind your own business. So now it is time up. Thank you very much for the participation. End of the discussion.